Good morning. My name is Maggie Hattinger. I work at Lehigh Valley Health Network. I am the manager of student affairs and admissions there. My co-presenter, who was not able to join me today, is also kind of my co-conspirator in the program that I'm going to talk to you a little bit about. Dr. Mary Ellen Miller is a faculty member in the Department of Nursing at DeSales University. What I'm going to take a couple minutes to talk to you today about is actually kind of part two. Mary Ellen was able to present at last year's conference, and at that conference what she did was provide an overview of the program, the Bridging the Gaps program that I'm going to walk you through a little bit today. What we intended with this presentation today was a little bit different and maybe hopefully a little bit more interactive with some of the extra time that we have. What we were hoping today is just to give a brief overview synopsis of this program and really introduce it more as an exemplar of programs that you could develop similarly in your communities, and also to introduce a model that some of you may or may not have some background with to help you think through how you might develop a similar program in your area. So I have no relationships to disclose. So just to give you a little bit of a background about us, so we are located in the Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania, Northeast Pennsylvania. That area comprises basically three cities, Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton, that run into each other there. We're about an hour north of Philadelphia and about an hour and a half, depending on the traffic, west of New York City. The distance between the two institutions is maybe 10 minutes on the highway, so it's not very far apart. So a little bit about DeSales University. It was founded in 1964, and it's grown from a small college. It's now a well-respected co-ed university with approximately 3,000 students enrolled. That figure includes both traditional and accelerated BSN students. They have a graduate MSN program. They also now have a doctorate in nursing. They offer both a pre-PA and a PA physician assistant track, and they also offer a doctorate in physical therapy. Of these health profession students, about half of them rotate at some point in their education through Lehigh Valley Health Network. So a little bit about us in Lehigh Valley Health Network. We are a network that our CEO likes to describe as offering a symphony of care. We are now up to four hospitals. We have three listed here. Just in the past month, we've acquired a fourth hospital. And in talks with a fifth hospital to merge sometime in the future. So we are quite large. We are a magnet hospital. We do have a children's hospital, a comprehensive stroke program, lots of different services. In addition to the hospital, though, we do offer care across the full continuum. So we're up to, I believe it's 9 health centers now. We have assorted other practices that are within the Lehigh Valley and outside the Lehigh Valley. We're up to about 1,100 on the medical staff, and we do own our own physician group, Lehigh Valley Physicians Group. In addition, we do have a long history of medical education and clinical education. So just to give you some context, we're very blessed in the Lehigh Valley. Not only do we have DeSales University, but we have 3 or 4 other top-notch nursing programs right there in the Valley. Building on that, we also have a long history of taking medical students and also having our own residency programs. And recently, in the last 5 years, we affiliated with the University of South Florida, Morsani College of Medicine. So we are now a regional branch campus of USF, and we do have, quote, our own medical students here now. They're enrolled in a 4-year program. They complete 2 years in Tampa and 2 years at Lehigh Valley. So just to give you some context to the breadth and number of students that we have at the hospital and in the network at any given time. So over the years, our relationship with DeSales University in particular has grown, and we've been able to experiment with and implement a number of different innovative approaches, really primarily geared towards getting students from DeSales University, particularly from the nursing and PA programs, out into the community and working with underserved populations, primarily in Allentown. Over the last 5 years, we've gone beyond the traditional rotational model and even gone out of the kind of traditional credit-based model with Bridging the Gaps, which I'll talk to you a little bit about. Bridging the Gaps was founded in 1991, and what it aims to do is bridge the education of health profession students and the provision of community health services to underserved populations. And you see here some of our participants from 2011. So about 5 years ago, in 2009, we actually started with a feasibility year in the Lehigh Valley. So the way that this works is the Bridging the Gaps network is basically based out of Philadelphia. So the University of Pennsylvania is where most of the administrative oversight comes from, but it truly is an affiliate program. So at each of the sites in Philadelphia and then across the state and into Delaware and New Jersey, there are sites of the program. And basically how this works is each site offers both academic, so faculty preceptoring, and then also administrative oversight for the program. There are three components of the program. Right now, we're involved only in the first. The first is a community health internship program, which I'll talk to you a little bit about. The second is a clinical rotation model, so your site could be set up as a Bridging the Gap site for students to do formal rotations. And then throughout the year, they do offer a seminar series of community health presentations. I believe they're monthly in Philadelphia that all participating students and community sites are able to participate in. At our Lehigh Valley site, we've focused for the first couple years just on offering the community health internship program over the summer. And the way that this works within our site is DeSales University provides the academic preceptor, so Dr. Miller provides that faculty academic perspective. The health network where I work, we offer the administrative support, the administrative oversight for the program. And then together we work on recruiting students and then also recruiting sites for the program. Importantly, we do partner together, the two institutions, but there is no limit on what students could participate. So we have had students participate from other colleges and universities in the past, and we're really looking to grow that. We don't want it to be just a program for DeSales University students. And I should mention, we are fortunate to receive funding from a couple different places. Through DeSales, we are able to get some federal work-study money to pay some of the students' stipends. DeSales University also chips in with the faculty time and a couple different things there. And then we are fortunate to be the beneficiaries of a grant from the Dorothy Ryder Poole Healthcare Trust that very heavily funds network, Lehigh Valley Health Network initiatives, and funds this program too. So just a quick overview of how the program actually works. So what we do is we take students and we match them in interdisciplinary pairs. So particularly with DeSales students, we will intentionally match a nursing student with a PA student. They work together in pairs and we send them out to a community site. We match them with a site that matches their interests and what they'd like to be working in possibly in the future. They're there for about 7 weeks. 4 days of the week, they're providing direct community health service under the supervision of a preceptor there. 1 day a week, they actually spend half a day in Philadelphia with all 200 participants in the Philadelphia program. It's a didactic component where they learn about different community health topics, largely specific to the Philadelphia area, but not necessarily so. They then drive back to Allentown, where most of them reside, and in the afternoon, they receive a didactic component that's specific to health issues in the Allentown community. We were, just a side note, at first we were kind of thinking they might not like all this driving back and forth, but the students have given us feedback that they actually don't mind and they find that kind of duality of perspectives important to them. They have found that helpful. In addition to kind of the 7 week schedule, we do have different social events where we bring together the community sites and also their clientele with our students. And one of those is a Heart Smart dinner that we offer every summer. And then every September, there's a symposium in Philadelphia where all participants come together and share what they've learned. In addition, at our Lehigh Valley site, we've started a smaller symposium just for the students in our community. So importantly, the students are paid. They're paid a stipend. We also pay for them to be in the program to receive the didactic curriculum that they get. And there's no cost, there's no direct cost, let's say, to the community sites. They get this basically as free labor over the summer. What they provide is the preceptoring for the student. So just to give you a snapshot of our growth over the couple years that we've had the program, it has been slow but steady growth. Our challenge has really been in getting students from other institutions interested in having the right balance of students and sites each year, but we do continue to grow. So this is the point in the presentation where in a traditional presentation I would usually show, you know, what our challenges and our opportunities have been, and I'm going to kind of remain silent a little bit of that. I've given you kind of the neutral overview of the program. And what I'd like to do is take the rest of the time to introduce to you a model and kind of a way of thinking if you're interested in growing a program like this in your own community. A caveat, I am not in any way an expert in this model that I'm going to present to you. But I'm a newbie who's enthusiastic about its potential, and I wanted to share it with you to kind of challenge your thinking about a program like this, because truly this is something that we believe could be modeled in many different communities in many different contexts. So what I'd like to share with you is a little bit about appreciative inquiry. Can I just see a show of hands if anybody has heard of this or used appreciative inquiry? Okay, great. So I'll actually introduce two different models. One you can kind of have your pick which you think would be work better in your context. But the first is this, and I'll take give you a minute just to take a look at that while I kind of introduce you to the concept for those who have not heard of this. So appreciative inquiry is really a method for studying and changing social systems that advocates for collective inquiry into the best of what is in order to imagine what could be, followed by a collective design of a desired future state. So it's kind of a long-winded kind of theoretical way of saying is it's really a strengths-based approach with a couple defined steps to kind of help you through the process. So the original article in 1987 that described appreciative inquiry really argued that there's been an overuse of problem solving. So usually we go out, we see a problem, we want to fix it. But that mentality, the authors argued, really limits your thinking, really limits the imaginative, the imagination that goes into fixing, quote, problems. And so they were really challenging to come up with a new mode of thinking to really argue against that traditional problem-solving mentality. So the model that, if we have a couple minutes, I'll at least introduce you to it, is this first one, which is kind of the I model. And if you look at the top, so phase one, inquiry, that's really thinking about what's the best of what is right now. So thinking currently and maybe a little bit into the past, but what do we do well now? The second step is really imagining what might be, what could be. The third step, innovation, is thinking through, so how can we accomplish this goal? And then the fourth step is implementation and actually navigating through the change to get to that goal. And it's all built on a foundation of trusting partnerships. So just to kind of compare the two more traditional problem-solving model and appreciative inquiry, just a couple snapshots there. But basically, AI advocates against deficiency models of thinking that traditionally focus on things like what are the problems, what's wrong, what needs to be fixed. And instead, it focuses on the questions that are shown here and the ones that I just walked you through. So I will show you another model, but before I do that, what I was hoping to do, if people will play along, is actually give you a moment to step back and reflect on your own context and your own communities and think a little bit about how you might start to think about a program like ours in your own context. So what I would love is if you feel comfortable doing so, sitting, you know, with the person next to you or just by yourself if you want to think for a couple minutes. But start with that first I, so that I of inquiry. So list three, and three is just a number I just picked, but in the next kind of like minute, 2 minutes, but list three assets in your community that support partnered programming. So, for example, in our community, if you just took DeSales University and Lehigh Valley Health Network, when we first implemented this program, started dreaming it up basically 5 years ago, we looked at the fact that we had a strong history of nursing education in the Lehigh Valley and a particularly strong relationship between DeSales and Lehigh Valley Health Network. We'd never done a program like this before, but we really looked at that relationship as a strong asset. So that's just one example. If you would, just take a minute, 2 minutes together, and just come up with some assets in your community. Again, just focusing on assets, and then we can share them. Does that sound good? This is the interactive part. And I won't talk during the interactive part. Okay, in the interest of time, so we can get on to just one more question after this, is there any pair that would like to share? And if you could just yell it out, and then I'll repeat it so it's taped then. But one of the assets that you listed as a strength in your community. You were all talking, so I know you have some.
Well, in Tucson, where I'm from, even though it's a big city, it's really a small town where everybody knows everybody, and we all work together.
Mm-hmm. And that's an extraordinary strength to have people that know each other and work well already. I didn't mention this, but Mary Ellen and also our kind of other co-conspirator had known each other and worked together before this. So having that personal relationship, of course, can be a great asset. So thank you. Another? I heard lots of talking in the back.
There's been no walls, and so we've been able to pull different partners in to help the community through the faith community church. So I think that's significant.
Great. So yeah, the faith community, in my opinion, is often overlooked. You know, when we're talking about community academic partnerships, we sometimes jump right to the nonprofits that are kind of more visible in doing some of that community work, but the churches and the faith-based organizations are doing a lot too. Great. Okay, just in the interest of time, just to get you thinking along this model, I'd like you to take another 2 minutes. So this is the next step. So this is step two, imagining. So we've thought about what we have now, and obviously you could spend a whole lot more time on that step. But now moving to the second step, describe the ideal. So don't think about challenges. Don't limit yourself by anything that we can't do right now. Staying in that mindset of what our strengths are. What would your ideal be? Think of some specific terms, some specific words, numbers, metrics, however you want to frame it, of what the ideal could be like. We have 2 minutes to do that, and then we'll share.
Thank you.
Okay. So I hear lots of talking again. Who would like to share first just something about your ideal? This is like your big, hairy, awesome idea that may or may not ever happen, but what the ideal could be. I know we probably have lots of big thinkers, big dreamers here, so share those big dreams.
I was just talking, we have a service we do. There's a local church who provides breakfast for the veterans. Some many are homeless or, you know, down in hours and that. But I would just think some of their medical needs are people. So they have a court. There's a lot of volunteerism, like blood pressure. We did flu shot, that type of thing, but just more of and sometimes it's just a place to stay. I think just more for medical need, like more of a direct clinic there.
Great. Well, see, and that's what I would challenge you to do, is to really aspire to. This model is really, don't think about any of the challenges. If you had unlimited budget, unlimited resources, unlimited personnel, what would it look like? So what do they say? If you dream for the, reach for the stars, you might land on, well, I don't know, reach for the moon, you might land on a star or whatever, but that's this way of thinking. So I would encourage you to say, our goal is to have a free clinic in this community that's staffed by one physician, you know, 2 days a week, and a full-time nurse, or is really to aspire to what that ideal could be. You know, we think about with Bridging the Gap.
How about a nurse practitioner?
Or a nurse practitioner. However you want to state it. So I would just encourage you to think those big goals. Someone else?
Well, I'm a little different. I'm a director of community outreach for a health system in South Jersey. And so I started a position. My dream is not to help the community realize what it is that they're trying to tell me what they need and how we can partner together, because what they tell me is you have to come there and little help there and take our blood pressure, and what I'm telling them is I can't do that 24/7. And then I'm trying to, you know, help them understand, you know, where they live, what I'm understanding, where they come from, what they're doing, help them understand that that's not the best way that we can partner together. And to me it's like looking at their risk and helping them understand, you know, and me understand what they perceive as their susceptibility and their risk, so we can build programs together around that.
Sure.
Yeah, so this is from a health system perspective, so it's all tied into metrics and measurements and money and this and that, but at heart I'm a community health purist, so I want that first part.
Right. Right. And the first part is having the conversation with them, right, and developing the vision together.
Yeah.
Right. Great. Thank you for sharing. So I won't walk you through the rest of these, but basically these are just some starters to get you thinking about some questions that you might work work through with some of the community partners that you have. Just real quickly, for those of you who maybe are a little bit more linear thinking, another model that also follows AI is the 4D model. It maybe looks a little cleaner, a lot less continuous, but it's really focused on discovery, dream, design, and destiny as the four steps. But you could also, you know, conceptualize this as a cycle as we did before. So just to leave you with another way of possibly thinking about this, and you can Google appreciative inquiry and you can find these things quite easily. So basically, just to wrap up, so my advice is if you're looking to start a program like this, first thing, start with a small group of very committed people who are like-minded in some way. You can really do a lot just with a couple people like that. Use AI just as a model to get you to start thinking. So when you're sitting and having those first brainstorming sessions, this is something really helpful to help you think of what those shared aspirations might be. When you're looking to grow beyond that small group, engage, engage, engage. So as many people as you can kind of draw into this shared vision so that they share it with you, the better and the possibly bigger your program might be. And then I would encourage you to revisit this and even revisit what you first brainstorm anytime you get stuck. Anytime it seems like the challenges get to be too much or you start to lose sight of what that vision would be, this is something that would be good to go back to. So with that, if I have questions, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, thank you very much for your time, and my contact information is up there. You can actually just Google appreciative inquiry. Let me see. This one was from a group called the Leader Skill Group. The first one I actually found from the CDC website, cdc.gov. Thank you. Anything else? Thank you.
I'm just going to say, we'll leave that for 1 second. I just want to say, because I know people came in, if you were looking for Anne, who was listed as third, she was unable to come. So just so you know, so are we okay if I switch to the next slide?